Konrads Kosmos. Die Mission Kreativität Teil 3 mit Christian Bürge. Mission Control, ready for takeoff.
3, 2, 1, 0.
Konrads Kosmos, der Podcast des Gründungsservices der Filmuniversität Konrad Wolf. Wir, das sind Eskander und Charlotte, sprechen in dieser dritten und letzten Episode zum Thema Kreativität mit dem Professor für Kreativität, Christian Bürge von der Universität für angewandte Wissenschaften aus Vilnius. Dieses Mal erzählt euch Christian, wie ihr im Team zusammen kreativ werdet und bleibt. Außerdem gehen wir näher auf den Ursprung der kreativen Person ein. Also, los geht's!
So, hi Christian, let's take a deep dive in the creative process and its tools. And first of all, what are ways of stimulating creativity?
Stimulating creativity is an important part of the creative process and the tools. First of all, the stimulation is a Kickstarter that helps you instantly become more creative in a situation, in a meeting, in a workshop, in a morning, in the evening, whenever you need to be creative. So the stimulator kickstarts your attitude to become more open-minded, and it kickstarts your thinking to think different, and it kickstarts the way you talk about your ideas with your colleagues or friends or family or whatever you are trying to be creative with. So it's an important part of the creative process. There's a lot of ways to stimulate. I think the key when we talk about stimulating and the ways of stimulating is that it's something that is more universal than just something for yourself. So you know maybe how to kickstart your creativity. For some people, it's go for a run. For other people, it's drinking 5 espressos. For other people, it's alcohol. For different kind of people, it's isolating yourself. For myself, the isolation is normally in a jacuzzi, in a sauna area where I isolate myself from the rest of the world, typically at times where other people are not joining them. This is one way of kickstarting, a more, let's say, personal way. In most cases, this will not work when we go together with other people. For example, one of my collaborators for the last 15 years and most of my work, when we go together in a jacuzzi and a sauna area, he cannot be creative. It kills his creativity. He likes to make long walks in nature rather. And for some reason, it doesn't work on me. So we need some ways of stimulating creativity that are more universal. Something that works on not just you, but on more people, the people you work with. So we need something that is more universal, something that applies to not just yourself, but to a broader group of people. For example, the people you work with and want to be creative with. So we know one of the most simplest things of stimulating creativity is a cognitive tool. It is to use completely random stimuli cards like words, pictures, or illustrations, or random scents like smells and stuff, or random music pieces to kickstart creative thinking by giving what is called a new starting point. Normally, when you start a creative process, you would think about the problem. And the problem, because you're a logical thinker and you've been trained to think logical, the problem will take you on what is called a highway thinking or a main track of thinking, where all the previous experience solutions will quickly appear to you. But when we want to be creative, we don't want these standard experienced solutions that we have seen in the past. We want something new, something that can change the rules of the game, something that can give you new insight. And therefore, we need to start thinking in a different way than what we normally do when we just start off from the problem and start thinking from that. A nice way to kickstart creativity is to have these small triggers. It can be a card of decks. You can also use personalities, you know, a series of personal or professional words or something that will help you think like other people would. For example, one of the personalities could be, how would Donald Trump solve this problem? Or how would a carpenter solve this problem? How would a psychologist? How would a stripper? And so forth. So these are some of the more fundamental ways of kickstarting or stimulating creativity for most people. Another thing that stimulates creativity is to create a strong focus. We need to have a common focus on what we're working on. That's one thing. So stating the problem and agreeing on the problem. But another perspective on focus is stop thinking about all the other things that you have in your mind. Most people, when they want to go into a creative session or creative meeting or workshop or situation, they bring along all the worries, all the thoughts from what they were doing before. Maybe they had just been answering an email in an angry way to the bank or to a wife or to a colleague. And they're still thinking about this email. Did they write it the wrong way? Did they forget something? Oh no, I should have rephrased it like that. Or maybe they are going into the meeting or the creative session with some kind of thoughts about something they forgot to buy or something they have to remember for tonight to buy for the dinner, or they have to call somebody important after the meeting. And these thoughts are running around in your mind. And if they're not killed or temporarily removed, then they can be a barrier to creativity. So in order to stimulate creativity from a focus perspective, we need to get rid of those. We know that a nice way to get rid of those is to, for example, keep your focus on a particular thing for, I don't know, 10 seconds, 30 seconds, something like that. And then you normally get a temporary relief from all the other things you've been thinking about. So some people get this 30 seconds of complete focus by making some physical exercise or having a meditation. Other ways of doing it that I've been working with also to have jokes. So I've been working with the military, and here they, for example, used small jokes that they prepared beforehand. When you start laughing at a joke, if you naturally laugh because it's fun or because you see something differently in the joke, like the point comes about, then it normally takes your complete focus for those few seconds. And that's enough. Normally that will help you forget everything else you're thinking about, everything else you have been worried about this day so far. And you can focus completely. Your attention can be directed completely towards the problem or the creative effort you're going to do. A third thing that maybe not as a stimulator, but it helps you continuously stay focused, is to use what we could call external memory. Because when we start producing ideas, we use our working memory a lot. When we start to get new ideas, we would like to remember them. Remembering and producing kind of overlap and becomes a competitive cognitive activity. So in order to just allow yourself, your mind, to produce more ideas and play with those ideas, you write down all the previous ideas. That means that every time you get an idea, write it down or say it to a voice recorder or have a video recorder during all the meetings so you're sure that they're captured in some way. That will help you not having to think about them and not being afraid to lose them. And therefore you can more easily move on to the next idea or play along with another person's ideas while you're waiting to say your own idea or getting back to your own idea later. These were some ways of stimulating creativity.
You've just mentioned the starting point of creativity, the stimulus of creativity. What is a creative process now?
A creative process is, for most people, it would be considered as a series of steps that help you work on a problem in a way so that the output will be more novel and more valuable and have been more creative than without these steps. But a nice way to look about this is if you combine it with the previous talk about stimulation, then it's a nice way to think about a creative process is to think about it as a temporary platform that you go up onto, a creative platform. So if you think about your everyday work, your everyday thinking, your everyday interaction, your everyday ways of being as something normal, then the creative process is not normal. It diverges from normal in so many ways, in the way you think, in the way you work, in the way you talk about your ideas and help other and interact and elaborate on other people's ideas as well. There are some rules of engagement and interaction in the creative process that are so different from your normal way of thinking, for most people at least, that it's nice to think about it as something only temporary and something different. So a platform you walk up onto where you have different rules, and once you're finished, you go back to normal, down from the platform again. So what is it that is different up there? First of all, I talk about these steps. The steps will help you divide the creative effort into smaller tasks that are more easy to understand and more easy to work, at least as a team, to work together on, so that nobody moves forward before everybody can move to the next step. So the whole point is to make it more easy to be creative by slicing up the creative tasks the creative effort into smaller tasks. Also, when we talk about creative process, since most people don't know how to be creative on command or at will, or maybe some let's say it's a creative process for teams, then maybe some of the people participating knows how to be creative, but those who don't, they may have a negative influence. Maybe they are negative towards new ideas, or they hesitate in building on other people's ideas, or they just downright judge them negatively when they hear something they don't recognize instantly. They start criticizing it. Then, for that reason, we typically, in a creative process, we need some kind of facilitation. We need somebody who knows the rules of the games, who knows what would be good steps to follow, who can facilitate people to follow the steps, to follow the rules under each step, and to push forward so that each step is finished in the right way and moved on to the next step, so that, let's say, you agreed the creative process is 2 hours, then you'll finish in those 2 hours. If you don't get that, then very often you end up, if you don't get facilitation, you end up spending way too much time in one step, and you never get to the final steps, so that you have a feeling that you never really finished this work, and you will get a negative attitude towards creative processes, and therefore you will be reluctant to join a future creative process. So facilitation is often, for most teams, is an essential part of a creative process. The role of the facilitator helps making it a success.
And can you please elaborate the steps of the creative process a bit more in detail?
There are many different variants, or let's say alternative approaches, for what is a creative process. Some of the more famous ones include, for example, creative problem solving, CPS, which probably is most famous for their terminology around divergent, convergent thinking. But they suggest a certain number of steps. They've had also versions of their creative process steps. So some of them have, I think, 6 steps, and another have 8 steps. And so that's one version. Another one very popular right now is design thinking, which some would argue is a creative process, some would argue is an innovative process, and some would just call it a designer's way of working. But it has also different versions depending on what variant you look at, how many steps they have, 4 or 5 steps typically. But we can also talk about the individual creative process, which may be at least some of the first creative processes that were suggested in science were individual creative processes by looking into how do these great geniuses, what are the steps they have when they engage in a creative process on their own as individuals. Regardless of whether we look at the team creative process or the individual creative process, there are some common steps. The first step typically is about understanding the problem. And in some process models, it's about reading about the problem. In some, it's about more ethnographic, going out and trying out the problem yourself, or seeing how people create the problem or live or experience the problem. It can also be about some kind of experimentation to try out the problem, but in many different ways. Where, let's say, the problem is related to picking up or delivering your children in a kindergarten. And maybe sometimes the children are sad, or that it will take some time before they get into place with other children. How can we solve that? How can we deliver or take in new kids in the kindergarten in the morning? Then you maybe, in this first step, you will look into what is the real problem, maybe from the side of the kindergarten teacher, and also from the side from parents, from the side of the children, maybe more different kind of children, maybe from the side of a psychologist or professor or some kind of other experts. And you can take a more broader one where you take in a lot of people, or you could take specialist perspective, but definitely trying to understand what is the real problem here. Is it about hesitation? Is it about waiting time? Is it about saying goodbye to your parents? Is it about fear of not having anybody to play with when the parents leave? Is it about some kind of kindergarten teacher they don't know too well today? Or what is it about? So these kind of understanding the problem in depth is typically the first step. Then step two, typically it's about producing a high number of ideas and a high number of original, novel, different ideas. For individual creative processes, this is often characterized as incubation, or thinking deeply about the problem and incubate on it away from the problem, maybe doing some other activities while you subconsciously think about it. When we talk about team creative process, we typically have some very structured tools at this, in this step, where we are producing ideas using mind mapping, brainstorming, lateral thinking tools, and other kind of tools for this random input. After that, we will end up with a high number of ideas. We move on to what is can be called a verification step. Verification step has different names and different ways of operating, and sometimes it's split into a number of steps. But the general theme about verification is that you select some ideas that are more interesting or more seems more desirable or feasible or novel in some way, and you try out whether they are really good ideas. One way of trying out is to further elaborate the ideas with interesting experts or other people. Experts can be, let's say, domain experts or users that are related to the problem. So if we have this problem about kindergarten, then we could take these ideas and invite some children, some parents, some kindergarten teachers, some experts, and help, they can help us elaborate it. If they are more novel ideas, then they will probably not understand the ideas at first hand. So we will invite some experts from other fields, maybe the places where we stole the idea or where we get inspired from the idea. They can help us better understand if it will work or not. Let's say we get goodbye situations. It basically is. So you also say goodbye in an airport to your family sometimes, or some people you have not seen for a long time, you've just seen for Christmas and they leave again, maybe they only come back next Christmas. So how do you organize the goodbye situation in an airport? And can you transfer that to the kindergarten? Maybe you'll need some experts from the way they designed this experience of saying goodbye in an airport. What were the reasons why they made it already before the security gate? Why didn't they make it at the gate instead? Why didn't they make, and some places at the car where you say goodbye, they have these kiss and goodbye parking lots. What were the reasons behind these? Can we somehow better test our ideas based on their understandings about it? And the final steps is, in some process models, it's not used, creative process model, but in others it is. But generally there is a way of interacting with the end users or the people we want to take in these ideas. It can be gatekeepers who have influence. Maybe the gatekeepers have resources or they have access to a network. Maybe they're running a YouTube channel or they are a publisher or they are the leader of this kindergarten and they can make the decision whether we will implement the ideas or not. This final step is typically preparing and persuading other people to understand the values of these ideas. So these are some of the typical ones. And of course, in some process models, these steps are separated into even smaller steps. So you will end up with 8 or 10 steps instead.
Early on, you've mentioned temporary enhancement of creativity. Are there long-lasting formulas for it?
So the time aspect of a creative process is interesting because as such, the creative process and its tools is designed to only temporarily enhance or increase the level of creativity for individuals or for a team. So back to the creative platform perspective, it's only while you're on the platform that you're more creative. When you get back down, you're normal, you're non-creative again. How long time do you need for this platform? And how long time is the maximum time you can be on there? First of all, a creative process is probably not well working if you only do it for 5, 10 or 15 minutes. It takes some time to really establish these rules and stimulate and kickstart the process and get into some serious, meaningful steps of creativity. Set aside a little bit more time, maybe half an hour, 2 hours, 8 hours. It would be more serious for creative process. On the other side, I've seen creative processes that lasted several days, including nights, where people were continually working. I've myself designed creative workshops where people just had sleeping mats they took out whenever they were tired. But only the ones who were tired, those who were not tired, they just continued. And then over the days, we see a significant increase in the number of novel ideas, as all the standard ideas are kind of developed throughout the first 12, 24 hours. But of course, at one time, people get tired. It's very hard to be in a creative process. It takes a lot of cognitive activity to be there. You will get tired. You will get exhausted from being up there. If it's not a natural way for you to be creative and you need this creative process, then basically you are facilitated to be different and think different and communicate different than what comes naturally to you. That is, of course, a tiring situation, exhausting situation. But from another perspective, we need this temporary enhancement because we are not naturally creative. And that links to the other episode we have about the creative person and how to develop creative competencies. Because if you have a team or you are an individual who is highly creative as a natural way of being, as a second nature, then of course you don't need so much a creative process because it will come naturally to you. You know how to do it. You not just know it. It's the way you solve problems. If your team and the whole team have these creative competences to a high level, then again, you don't need the creative process. It's just the way you solve problems, or if you understand the situation of the problem, needs creative solutions, then that's how you will work. Then how does creative process and creative competences link? First of all, if you run a creative process and some of the participants are highly creative people, then of course the creative output would be higher than if they were not. So it gives a higher quality to the creative process if the participants are more creative. You can expect a higher creative output, more novel and valuable ideas. And the other way around, if you continuously work in creative processes on a regular basis in your team or as an individual, that is also a kind of a deliberate practice of your creativity. of course, only related to the steps you're working in, but it will make you better and better at these creative processes, and it will make you faster getting onto the creative platform and quicker to get into the creative mood. That means that you can make the creative processes shorter as you become better at them. So you slowly advance, or not slowly, but you continuously advance your creative competences by continuously working in these creative processes.
Now we have teams. What are dominating factors for creative teamwork?
I think one of the dominating understandings is that, at least since the 1960s, it has been increasingly talked about as a team effort, as a team work to be creative. There are many good reasons for that. First of all, we know that, for example, from a cognitive perspective, we know that the more knowledge available in the team, let's say diverse knowledge, cross-disciplinary knowledge, cross-professional, cross-industry, the more likely you will get novel ideas if you combine this knowledge. One person can only have a certain amount of knowledge that they can combine internally in their own mind. Therefore, adding people with different education background, with different professional experiences, and with different maybe cultural experiences, will make at least the foundation for developing ideas bigger and more and better. So that's one perspective. Another perspective is this about how, when you work in teams, you get what could be called cognitive stimulated by your team members. So everybody has had this experience, hopefully, where somebody in your team says out loud an idea, and from that you get another idea. So this idea, your colleague says, inspires you to produce a second idea that's very different. So this can be termed as cognitive stimulation in groups. And this is very important. But it also has some issues. First of all, sometimes if people present their ideas as they produce them, and they do it in a very persuasive way, and they do it early on in the teamwork, then they can create strong patterns on the whole group's ways of thinking. So imagining you set out to be creative for a couple of hours, and somebody stands up or says out loud a very good idea in the beginning, and they are very persuasive, articulate about this idea, then this can be not just from a social or hierarchical point of view, but also from a cognitive point of view. You can get stuck in that way of thinking, and it blocks you from diverging and thinking in new directions. So you can end up having a team of five very different people who think very alike because they were forced into this pattern of thinking, into the direction of thinking by the first idea they hear. Research suggests that you can easily end up in these fixations or pattern thinking if you listen to other people's examples or ideas. From that point of view, it would be nice to have certain parts of the creative process where you are not affected by other people's ideas, but where you can, to a high degree, try out thinking up your own directions of thinking before you get affected by other people's ideas. Another perspective on it is that when we have some ideas and we would like to elaborate those ideas, then sometimes you elaborate it alone. Let's say you have invented a beer bottle made of paper, and you think it's a quite nice idea. You have thought about making it in a certain way with a certain design, but you're still unsure whether the paper would hold when it gets wet. So you need some kind of surface protection on it, and you don't know much about it. So it's a good idea to invite other people into that creative session who may have some knowledge about surface treatment of paper. And they would have to get into a creative process, because normally if you just ask them, will it work? They would probably say no. So you have to get them into a creative process where they help you getting ideas for how could it be made on paper, how could we make it in a way so it will hold and hold when you transport these beer paper bottles around the world, and when people are drunk and they throw them into each other or say cheers to each other. From that perspective, we also need to collaborate and in teams and outside the teams. A nicer way to think about this is that some parts of the creative process may be better to do individually. For example, the first parts of a creative process, particularly if people know how to be creative, set aside time where they can explore their own creative ideas before being affected by others. Then spend some time where you try to elaborate the more novel ideas, those that require more than what you have in your mind as individuals of knowledge, to be elaborated and tested in some way. Do they work? Would it be interesting to move on with these? So you use the whole knowledge of the group, the whole experience of the group, to test or elaborate the ideas. So that's a nice way of putting it. Of course, you can have a step also in between where you produce ideas in teams. But then comes a third dimension in. That's the social dimension. Many people fear that if they say something out loud that's novel, that's different, that may be highly innovative, that maybe it won't be received as a creative idea, but rather received as a strange, weird thought. So they don't tell out loud the idea, and they keep it running around their mind, whether they should tell it or not. And in all that time, they don't produce more ideas, and they don't inspire other people, and they don't get it elaborated. So that's one of the problems of team creativity. Again, when we talk about team creativity in the production of ideas, maybe we could have one step first that's individual, and a second step, maybe to decrease the risk of this social fear of judgment, we can make the group or the team smaller or split into smaller teams. So it's far more safe to say out loud ideas on a two-man group or as a pair to each other than it is to say in a team, let's say, of eight people, where you can fear somebody maybe speculating about judgment or say out loud, that's a stupid idea. Why did you even say that? So maybe we end up with a process model where we favor some of these advantages and disadvantages, solve those, where we have individual step first, second step in smaller teams, and third step, where we elaborate ideas in bigger teams, where we need a lot of knowledge for elaboration. It's just one way of looking at it, but at least we have to be very aware that there are some issues related to pattern thinking, social judgment, and finally also there are some problems also related to concentration and productivity. That's my final point here. If you're eight people sitting together for 1 hour, talking together, trying to produce ideas and share them together in a, let's call it brainstorm style, then you, because of the cognitive competition between trying to listen to other people's ideas while trying to produce more ideas, in rough terms, you'll end up with 1 hour of creative production, even though you're eight people for 1 hour sitting together in a meeting. But if you put those eight people into eight different rooms and they know how to be creative and you tell them to be creative individually, let's say for the first half hour, then you actually end up with 4 hours there of creative production. And then you spend the last half hour maybe elaborating on some of the ideas that were produced. So you end up with 4 hours of creative production and a half an hour of creative elaboration, rather than in the first one where you only had 1 full hour of creative production because everybody was trying to listen while producing. So they could not do both at the same time. So here are some of the thoughts to take into account when you are designing creative process and tool approaches for creativity.
Das war unsere letzte Episode mit dem Professor für Kreativität, Christian Bürge. Wir bedanken uns bei Christian für die 3 sehr inspirierenden Gespräche zum Thema Kreativität. Vielleicht gab es ja den ein oder anderen kreativen Anstoß für euch und eure Ideen, die ihr an eurer Uni oder im Berufsalltag direkt mit einbringen könnt. Ihr findet diese und weitere Episoden von Konrads Kosmos unter www.filmuniversität.de/audio. Und ich würde sagen, auf zur nächsten Mission. Seid ihr bereit? Gefördert durch das Bundesministerium für Wirtschaft und Energie im Rahmen von EXIST.